Hello, I'm Steve Bronham with the Missing People Podcast. In this program, my co-host Kelly Jolkowski, founder and president of Project Jason, talked with Glendine Grant, mother of missing Jessica Foster. Jessie was last heard from on March 28, 2006, and was believed to be at 1009 Cornerstone Place in North Las Vegas at that time. Unfortunately, she's not been seen nor heard of since. Let's listen to their conversation.
Thank you for participating today, Glendine. It's nice to get to talk to you. Like I always say, and I wish that we didn't have to talk for the reason that we are talking.
Great. Well, I do appreciate this too. I've been looking forward to it. Anytime I can help with Jessie and get her information out there, I'm always grateful.
And we'd like to welcome everyone to the Missing People Podcast. Our guest this evening is Glendine Grant. She is the mother of missing Jessica Foster, missing for over a year, approximately March 28, 2006, from Las Vegas, Nevada. And her family is actually from Canada. So that's something with a missing person disappearing in a different country that presents its own sets of problems. Glendine, we appreciate you being here today to share with us your story about Jessica and the journey that you've been on since then. Let's go back to that period of time, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that Jessica decided to go to Las Vegas.
I sure can. It was in the spring of 2005, and she had been traveling a little bit. She had gone down to the United States and decided to stop in Las Vegas on her way back so she could celebrate her 21st birthday, which was 2 weeks from the time that she was going there. So she stayed there with a friend, and her birthday came and went, and she liked it and continued to stay there. And within a month of moving there, she started dating a fellow who probably not too long after that, within a month or so after that, she started living with him. And he was taking care of her expenses. He told us he was a trust fund baby who was a race car driver. And he had a very nice house and lots of money. And, you know, he just wanted her there by his side, and she didn't have to worry about the expenses of living there. I didn't know what to think. I told her I wasn't crazy about the idea, but she was also, at that point, 21 years old. And I couldn't really tell her to pack up and move home.
So when was the last communication with her, and who was that with?
She last spoke to her older sister, Crystal, and it was on March 28th of 06, and they talked and text messaged each other several times and ended their last conversation with, "I'll talk to you tomorrow," and we've never heard from Jessica since, and it's now been over 14 months.
Glendine, when did you start to get concerned that maybe something wasn't quite right? I'm not sure how often you communicated with her since she was in Las Vegas and you're in Canada.
Well, we talked to Jessie every day, and it was when Crystal couldn't get a hold of her the very next day, she wondered what was going on. And then the next day came along, and she still couldn't get a hold of her, and she told me by the next day. So it's only been 3 days since the last time she talked to her. But that was enough. We talked to Jessie so often that 3 days without hearing from her was alarming. And then on the fourth day, my other daughter, Katie, told me that she had been trying to get a hold of Jessie for several days also. So at that point, we knew, while Jessie's not returning phone calls, and I started emailing her and leaving my own messages, and I wasn't getting responses either. So we were alarmed right away, but we couldn't get a hold of anybody that had any kind of answers for us until the 9th of April, when I finally got a hold of her boyfriend. And that's when he just told us that she had packed up and moved out on April 3rd. None of it made any sense.
Well, no, and particularly since it was the end of May where you had your last contact, but yet he's stating she moved out in early April. So that seems very strange to me.
That's right, because she wouldn't have waited that long to tell us she'd moved out if she had only just packed up and moved away from him. And the fact that we now are, 14 months later and still haven't heard from her, we know that whatever happened to her had to have happened between her hanging up from her sister's call and her sister trying to reach her again the next day. because it was land. Those sisters talked all the time. And they had talked and text messaged each other probably, I would say, 10 times that day, and I would probably be guessing low. And not to, you know, just not to be there all of a sudden, but, you know, the very next day, it just didn't make any sense right from the beginning.
That's definitely a very abrupt cessation of communication between you. What was that like for you, being so far away from where she was, to not know what was going on?
Well, it was really scary because her dad was gone away also. So we were torn between thinking that maybe she had joined them. Her dad and his wife and their side of the family had gone to Mexico for his stepdaughter's wedding. And we had thought, well, maybe Jesse just decided at the last minute to go. And they weren't due to come back till the middle of April, 14th of April. So we were sort of sitting there on pins and needles waiting. The police had already taken our file on the 9th of April, but they weren't really going to work on it actively until we knew if she had only just decided to go down to Mexico. And so we waited, and we had to wait till the 14th. We had no way to get a hold of her dad in Mexico. It wasn't anything that our family had planned with them, so we had no contact information. They came back from their trip in Mexico after having, you know, a wonderful week in Mexico to find out that we hadn't heard from Jesse, and Jesse certainly was not with them. So it was not until about the middle of April that everything really started kicking up. You know, where people were starting to really worry. The police were taking the situation a little bit more seriously, and all the family members that had been waiting for them to come home, we were all now extremely worried.
That's a long time to go without, you know, taking action, but I can understand that, you know, some people might have thought maybe she did go to Mexico to be with her father.
It made perfect sense because they had, Jesse does travel. So it wouldn't have been, you know, too out of the blue for Jesse to decide to go somewhere at the last moment. She'd done that before. And it wouldn't have been, you know, too much for the family to have just, you know, decided to have her join at the last minute thinking that we all knew. None of it was, the only thing that was alarming about it was, you know, if she wasn't there, what do we do? You know, we'd already gone from the 29th until the 9th, wondering where she was. Then we find out that he's trying to say that she didn't, she'd been gone since the 3rd. So we had this smaller time gap. Now where, what happened between the 29th and the 3rd? But in the meantime, it wasn't until the 9th that the police actually went to the home she'd been living at for just a quick check of the residence. And it wasn't until the 14th that they really said, okay, I guess we have to, you know, actually open a file. In the meantime, I'm sitting up here trying to keep calm, trying to think, okay, she's just gone to Mexico, trying to keep her sisters calm. You know, I mean, if I had have let my reactions, how I really felt, my other kids would have just been, you know, terrified. But I was like, oh, Jesse, she's probably having the time of her life. In the meantime, I was scared to death. I was emailing her frantically, and I just didn't tell anybody how worried I really was in those first days.
But obviously you had reason, because of her habits of staying in very close contact with you and her sisters.
Exactly. Jesse has always been a very close, the favorite of the sisters, and always open with all of us. That's why everything that happened from the moment we stopped hearing from her until today, all the information we've been finding out, everything that has come in from all this has been a tremendous shock. We're not talking about, you know, a young girl who has a troubled past who took off and now, you know, has gotten herself into trouble. Jesse's story isn't like that. I mean, Jesse's was a grade A student. An A student. She was a track star. She'd been in the paper for her high jump, and she'd been swimming since she could, you know, before she could walk. She'd always had an active life and a very social life. And, you know, for her to you know, get involved with somebody like a boyfriend who, you know, has been previously, you know, it's proven he's been involved with prostitution and escort service, and us to not know anything about this, we still can't understand where did this come from? How did the secret start to form? How did Jesse stop telling us what's going on? We still don't know. And the only thing that makes sense, and it scares me, is through threats and violence. And from what I heard, that's probably what happened to my girl. Probably after she was taken to all the exciting things and shown the fun side of life, something happened, and that's when she stopped telling us everything about what was going on in Las Vegas. You know, it's really hard for me to think of how, you know, it must have been, you know, for that first initial time that the reality hit her, and it's really hard for me to... I can just, you know, I can hear her mind thinking, oh my God, this is what Mom's always warned me about. So it's hard for me to think back to the first beginnings of this.
That's okay. You take a break if you need to. That's perfectly fine. Don't worry about it. I understand. Just take your time.
Sorry about that.
Oh, no, that's fine.
Okay.
We want you to be comfortable, and that's fine. It's your
Not the problem at all, Kelly. I am comfortable talking about it. I just sometimes it's a bit overwhelming. I'm not overwhelmed for myself or worried about, you know, making me feel sad. I just, my thing is, I think about what she's been through and what she's going through and what she must be thinking we're thinking. I think that's the best way to sum it up is I worry so much about how worried she must think we are, and I think she's probably more worried about us worrying about her than she is about her own self, and that's what makes it really hard. Could be taking up, you know, needed energy worrying about us instead of trying to, you know, use her mind and think
about herself. Protect herself.
That's
sure.
Right, and I don't want her to worry about us. She might not have a clue that her story's getting out there like it is, you know? She might not have a clue. And another thing that does worry me, Kelly, and I don't even like to think about this, is that if I ever find out that Jesse was alive for some time and then all of the exposure, she ended up, you know, being killed from that, that's going to be something that's going to be really hard for me to deal with. So every time I do something that's bringing a little more exposure, I'm always grateful and really happy, and don't get me wrong, I don't worry about it, but those thoughts creep in my mind, like, what if they think, okay, this, you know, Mom has just done one thing too many now, and we've got too much risk. And then they do something to her, and that's where I start, you know, where my sanity starts losing it.
There's definitely a lot of what ifs that creep into this as we're going through this difficult journey. Back in mid-April, when everyone knew for sure that Jessica did not go to Mexico with her father, and then activity started to take place, what were the police down there doing, and then what did the family start to do?
Well, initially, the police did really nothing, and I don't mean that in a negative way, like they didn't do anything to help us. I mean, they did everything they could, but there was nothing left. They had already been to the house on April 9th, the day I filed my missing persons report. The boyfriend let them in the house, and they did a surface check, and everything seemed fine. What bothers me in all that is that when they went there, they weren't looking for anything else than other than just to see, you know, where she lived. There was no, you know, crime had been committed. There was nothing that they were looking for. But what bothers me is that from the 29th of March till the 9th of April when they went there, there was an awful lot of time to clean that house up.
So the police did just kind of a basic premise check at that point back on April 9th. What kind of activities was the family pursuing at that time?
Well, we were still on the 9th waiting for Dwight to come home, Jesse's dad. And the moment he got home is when things kicked up. He hired a private investigator right away. We started contacting media and trying to get Jesse's name out on web pages for missing people. Just whatever we had to do. We were given contact names of people who had already been through the same situation, and they started us on our right journey. As you know, I mean, there's a lot to do that the family has to do The police will do the investigation. They will get the information out. They will follow leads, but they don't put your family, you know, your loved one on all the missing person websites and contact people such as yourself with your organization and do all the things that needs to be done to get the name out there. They don't contact newspapers and TV so that, you know, the name is out there, so the picture's out there. They don't do any of that. So that's what we had to do. We had to, you know, started up our website. We started emails. We started contacting all the media. And I still do that every day, right till today. I haven't missed one day that I haven't done something like that. We've got a lot of, you know, we've got a name out there a lot. We've got a lot of exposure, not enough exposure. I always say when you have a missing person, there's never enough exposure until the person's home. So obviously we've got a lot, but still not enough. And, you know, we've got her story originally was out on the Geraldo show, then the Maury show talked about it, and then the Montel show talked about it. And, you know, so we're getting more and more, which is not enough. That's all I can say is until we find Jessie, we haven't got enough exposure on her. And so anytime we can do something like this or get her name in a news story, then we take that opportunity and we do it.
Well, you've done a very good job, and I know that's not only is it a shock to have a person disappear from your life and be so helpless, but then it becomes a shock, I think, to find out what you're tasked with doing. Not only are you trying to kind of recover yourself from the shock, but now you realize that you need to do all these duties. What kind of obstacles did you face being in another country?
Oh, gosh. Well, not knowing any of the laws, not realizing that a person disappearing in Las Vegas is different. She could have disappeared from any other city or state in the United States, and it would have been different. But the fact that she disappeared in what's widely known as Sin City, her case did not take on as much steam as I had thought it would. I thought, you know, here we have a young woman who went missing in another country. It sounds so familiar, like the Natalie Holloway story. And I thought that we were going to get, you know, so much help. And it turns out that we didn't get so much help because even though in a lot of ways the stories are similar, one thing that I have to face that is really bothersome is that people think, well, Jessie made choices. Well, maybe she did make a choice to go to Las Vegas and maybe she did choose to be with the wrong person. But after that, a lot of things she did weren't by choice. A lot of things she did was because she was forced into it. There's hospital records that Jessie had been beaten. There's people that we've talked to that have told us that everything that Jessie did in the escort industry, she had been forced into doing. And it's because of a lot of this information and the cities that Jessie had been sent to that the case went from just being a missing person in Las Vegas case to a human trafficking case where the task force Atlas is now investigating. What Atlas is, it's an anti-trafficking league against slavery, and they investigate human trafficking and white slavery cases. And Jessie's case since March has been a case for them now. So it's moved up in the type of investigation that it's getting now. And that's another thing that I'm so thankful for. Because what that means is it's not sitting there now waiting for information as a missing person. Now there's other information that we've given them that can be used as tips because now there has been a crime committed. A missing person is not a crime unless you can prove there's a crime committed. A victim of human trafficking, there is a crime. Somebody's being kidnapped and taken away against their will. So that means they can investigate it a lot different. Thank God. That's all I can say is thank God that, you know, new eyes are looking at it. It's like a fresh start for her case. It was a year into the missing, but thank God it's gone this far now.
So there is some evidence that she has been kidnapped and forced into some sort of a slavery situation?
The only way that there is, there's no proof of a kidnapping other than the fact that when you are a victim of human trafficking, you have been kidnapped and taken somewhere against your will. And what they have that were the indicators that allowed them to investigate it as a human trafficking, which again is not proof positive, but they do have many indicators of human trafficking, such as the people they talked to about, you know, Jesse being forced into doing it, the hospital records of her being beaten, the cities that she had been taken to, which are considered hubs of human trafficking, which is Fort Lauderdale, Manhattan, New Jersey, and Las Vegas. Atlantic City in New Jersey. So four of the cities that my daughter was taken to while this has been going on are all part of a hub of human trafficking that the task force works with. So there were things that told them there were many indicators, and that's what has allowed them to move the case up to a human trafficking. There's still no proof, but to me it seems some of the proof that we consider proof, they don't consider proof in the same way. I mean, if when I tell them that, the reason that I instantly phoned my daughter when Peter Todd told me that she'd been gone since the 9th of April, I should say since the 3rd of April, is because he told me she left, took everything she owned except her hair dryer and her makeup. And knowing my daughter, she's not going to pack up everything she owns and move and leave her hair dryer and her makeup behind. As soon as he told me that, I told her, told me, had to report her missing because something's wrong. Jesse's not going to leave her family, not tell us where she is, take everything except hair dryer and makeup. She likes to do her hair and she does her makeup, and she's not going to leave those things behind.
Was it a shock to you to learn and understand about human trafficking, and what have you learned about it since this has all happened?
It was a big shock. I mean, I'm one of those people who was just an avid watcher of Law and Order and CSI. To me, it was all just on TV and in the movies. You know, you hear about things in the news, you know it happens. Canada doesn't have as much. We have crime, but it's not as much, and therefore it's not as upfront in our newspapers and on our local news. I come from a smaller town. You know, we've got less than 100,000 people. You know, I mean, it's big enough, but it's nothing like this. The shock of what happened, the shock that my daughter had been involved in this type of activity, the shock that people had been forcing her into things, and the fact that my daughter had been working as an escort, I can't even comprehend. I've seen, like, my daughter was arrested. I saw her mugshot. It didn't even look like her. They told me she had another name she used while she was working in the escort agency, and her name was Taylor. And every time I look at these pictures and every time I think of this, I think of her as Taylor, because I don't think of her as Jesse. Jesse can't do this kind of stuff. Taylor did this, and it's ironic how I can separate the two. I know that Taylor, she was forced to use the name Taylor, and she was forced to do what she had to do. And I think part of the way that I can keep my head on straight is that I think of it as this was what happened to Taylor. And I don't know if you can understand what I mean by that, but it just helps me protect Jesse, I think, in my mind.
And protect yourself.
And myself. And I try not sometimes to think that I need to. I do try to think that I'm, you know, big and strong, but you're right, I do probably do it to protect myself also.
Oh, yes. We all have to figure out protection mechanisms for ourselves based on the different situations that we're in. You know, they're all missing, but there's different scenarios going on behind the scenes. And I'm so sorry that you've had to go through this. How has this affected her sisters?
Well, that's hard for me to even tell. Going through their lives, I see them putting things on hold, as we all have, until Jesse comes home. You know, well, we can't do this because Jesse has to be here. We can't do that because Jesse has to be here. And sometimes as I talk to people, I tell them, you know, I'm waiting for her to come home before we can carry on. So we're kind of stuck in March of 2006. You know, I mean, we haven't really celebrated much in the ways of birthdays and Christmas and Mother's Day, anything like that. And when we're just waiting, you know, I mean, we've got a list of things that we're going to tell Jesse when she comes home. There's been births, there's been deaths, there's been marriages. Because as terrible as you think it is, life does go on. And as terrible as that is to us, it's such a good thing because it helps us keep going. You know, I mean, my nephews are having babies. My nephew's getting married. My youngest daughter, who just found out, is going to have a baby. Like, there's so many things that have happened. There's several people that have been close to Jesse who have passed away just since she's been missing. And, you know, the one thing that's always happened all of Jesse's life, anytime anybody really close to our family has passed away, my daughter Jesse has always been somewhere else, spending the night at her friend's house or away for a field trip. And, you know, and then I have to go and get her and bring her home and tell her grandma passed away or Uncle Mike passed away or somebody's passed away. And she used to hate it if I phoned her at someone's house because she always thought something bad. And, you know, now here she is gone, and all these people have passed away. And I don't, and by that, I mean, you know, three very close to her people who have passed away. And that's a lot of people in just over a year. And I can just hear her, like, Mom, it always happens when I'm not home, you know. And I just really, I get myself crazy sometimes because I think of all these conversations in my head. And then I have to remember that, you know, those are just scenarios I'm playing out. And then I come back, and then I come back to the rest of us. Jesse has two younger sisters and one older sister. The younger sister is looking, you know, to wait for her to give advice. And the older sister feels like, well, I wasn't there. You know, I was the last one to talk to her, and I should have been there for her. And it's really confusing for us all because we know that we shouldn't feel guilty for things. We do to a point, and we just, you know, my oldest daughter, Crystal, said it, you know, perfectly. My daughters, they've always made a circle. The four of them have made one circle connecting, and now there's, you know, there's a space, and they don't connect to make the whole, and they need to do that so that they can be whole, because there's four of them. I know sometimes I ramble on because I'll get halfway through my thoughts, and it's not like I'll forget my thoughts. It's just that I'll kind of get captured up in them, and then I'll be at a loss.
You're hurting yourself, and the hurt's not only for you. The hurt is for them. So you're seeing your daughters, your other daughters, so hurt as well.
This concludes the first section of Kelly's interview with Glenn Dean. If you have any information about Jesse Foster, please contact Detective Dave Molnar with the North Las Vegas Police Department at 702-633-1779. For more information about Jesse, please go to jessefoster.ca. That's jessefoster.ca. You're listening to the Missing People Podcast, copyright 2007. All rights reserved and held jointly by the Missing People Podcast and Project Jason. Original music created and performed by Ariana Kemaw. For more information about Project Jason, please go to projectjason.org. From my co-host, Kelly Jolkowski, I'm Steve Branham with the Missing People Podcast.